And we're holding on to Zion Omer Aleph, the fifth line. We went through the last couple of days how we know that an Eved Ivri or Omer Ivriya can be acquired with Kesef, and now the Mishnah had mentioned they can be acquired with Kesef or with Shekel. So now we need to deal with, so we figured out how we know Kesef. We had the whole discussion about the various kinds of Eved Ivri. So now we come to Shtar, and we need to discuss how we know that works in order to acquire an Eved or an Eved Ivri or an Omer Ivri. So the Gemara says, "Over Shtar Minolan." So where do we know that from? Omer Ula Im Acheres Yikachloi. So the Torah tells us in connection with an Omer Ivri, first, it describes how it talks about the concept of Omer Ivriya. Then it mentions the concept of yield, which we're going to talk about in a couple of blats about the concept that the master himself or his son can marry the Omer Ivriya, and the money that was used to pay for her to begin with becomes the Kesef Kiddushin. But then the pasuk continues, Im Acheres Yikachloi. If the master or her son takes himself another wife. So in context, the pasuk is saying that he has to make sure he's not allowed to diminish her rights. He can't say, well, the other one is the primary wife and you're only like a pilagish or something. No, he has to treat her co-equal with the other wife. But the point is, the Torah says, if he takes himself another wife, so therefore he kisha hakos of la'acheres. In that way, then the Torah is comparing the Omer Ivriya to an acheres, to another woman whom the other might marry. And therefore, ma acheres mekanya b'shtar. So just like the acheres, just like a regular wife, can be acquired with a shtar, as we learned earlier in our perek, that in turn we learn from a hekesh, from the fact that since the yotz of a hoysa, so since a shtar takes her out of a marriage, then a shtar can bring her into it. Therefore, we learn from that the Omer Ivriya can be bought to begin with using a shtar. Then we learned the last couple of days, we said there is as far as the Eved Ivri, there's a hekesh between him and an Omer Ivriya, because you have a different pasuk that says for Ivri Oyho Ivriya. So that covers the case of the Eved Ivri. Within the Eved Ivri himself, we talked about, you have the different cases where he sold by Beis Din versus where he sells himself. So then you have how we include all of those. So now in the previous sugya, we discussed the question, does everybody agree that there is a gzeira shava between the different kind, between the Eved sold by Beis Din and the Eved who sold himself? So we said in the end, it seems on the face of it like everybody accepts that gzeira shava, in which case, then we've covered all the different kinds of avodim. On the other hand, we shouldn't even talk about, as we learned yesterday, there is the possibility, maybe there is some Tana who doesn't learn that, and who doesn't learn that gzeira shava, and in that case, then he would have to learn the Mercher Atma in a different way. But in any case, we start with the Omer Ivriya, and we go from there. But the Gemara says, "Hanichal amanda Omer shtar Omer Ivriya odin koisvei." That works according to the opinion that says that if you're going to acquire an Omer Ivriya with shtar, who is it that writes the shtar? It's the master who writes it, the one who's buying it. So in that case, the same way as a shtar kedushin earlier in the parak, it talked about that the shtar kedushin is written by the husband. He's the one who writes out on a piece of paper or what have you, hareat mekudeshesli. So now, if the Odin writes the shtar to acquire an Omer Ivriya, then it's the same parallel kind of thing. El under Omer Av Kosrei, but you have an opinion, as the Gemara is going to now bring the Machlokas about it, that no, it's the father who writes the shtar, the father being the one who's selling his daughter as an Omer Ivriya. So in that case, it's not like Shtar Kedushin, because by Shtar Kedushin, you don't have the father writing on behalf of his daughter, just the opposite. You have the father receiving that Shtar on behalf of his daughter. So then, my Ikal Neymar, according to that opinion, what are you going to say? How are you going to learn the concept of acquiring an Omer Ivriya with a Shtar? Geitmar, as in fact, we have a Machlokas about that. Shtar Omer Ivriya, Mi Kosvoi, who is it that writes that shtar? It doesn't mean, by the way, that he himself has to write it. The same way as with a get, where we said the chosav law, and we go into getin, doesn't necessarily mean the husband himself has to write it. He, or we said takonas chachamim, is that she, the wife, pays a sofer to write it. The point is, in other words, who's responsible for seeing that it's written. Rav Huna Amar Odin Kosvoi, Rav Huna says that the master is the one who writes it. So he would write a shtar that would say something to the effect that I am acquiring your daughter as an Omar Hevriya. And Rav Chista says Av Kosvoi, the father writes it, and he writes, I am selling my daughter, I'm giving my daughter to you as an Omar Hevriya. So, Honichol Rav Huna, so then it works out according to Rav Huna, because again, according to Rav Huna, the shtar to acquire an Omar Hevriya is exactly parallel to the shtar to acquire an Isha. Elul Rav Chista Ma'ikon Neimer, but according to Rav Chista, what are you going to say? According to him, how will you learn? You can't learn the shtar of an Omar Hevriya from the shtar of Kiddushin, because according to him, they're written by different parties to the transaction. So according to him, where you're learning b'chlal, the shtar works. And the answer is Omar Abacha Bayakov, Omar Kra, fine, but you have a different pasuk, a couple of psukim earlier regarding the Omar Hevriya. It says, Lois Seite Ketseis Ha'avodim. She does not go out the way that Avodim go out. Implying, in other words, as we're gonna talk about later on, it means, in other words, we know we're gonna talk about in a few blocks when we get to the dinim of Avodim Knanim. We know you have the famous concept of Shein Va'ayim with an Eved Knani. If you knock out his eye or his tooth or any one of 24 certain Rosh Avodim, then he goes free. So we're saying an Omar Hevriya does not go free with that. If the master injures her eye or tooth or what have you, he just pays her the usual nezek, tsar, etc. for that, but she doesn't go free. So therefore, though, the implication is also, since it's saying lois seitzik, it says ha'avodim, she doesn't go out like the way that avodim do, implying avol niknesi b'kinyan avodim, but the implication is she can come in and be acquired like the way avodim are acquired, umay nihu shtar. Namely, what would that be needed to say as far as shtar? We don't need it for kesef, because kesef we already had a different pasuk, so therefore it must be referring to shtar. In turn, Eved Knani, we're going to learn later on in the parak, because an Eved Knani is similar to Karka, and Karka can be acquired with a shtar, therefore so can an Eved Knani. And since the Pasuk is saying that an Omar Hevriya is acquired in a way similar to an Eved Knani, then there you go. According to Rav Chista, there's your shtar. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ema avol niknesi kekinin avodim u'mayinu chazaka." Why? Say that maybe another way, we're going to learn later on in the parak, that an Eved Knani can be acquired in three ways. Kesef shtaru chazaka. So kesef, fine, we don't need a ribui from the posik, because we already know it, as we learned in the previous sugya. Shtar, we're saying over here, but there's also chazaka, that you can acquire an Eved just by doing chazaka on him. For example, by having him do work for you. And that's enough to complete the kinyan. So maybe by an Omar Hevriya, the same thing. The answer is no. Omar Kra, no, because by an Eved Knani, where do we learn that an Eved Knani can be acquired with chazaka? Omar Kra, the pasuk says that you will bequeath your avodim knanim to your children. In fact, that's the pasuk from which we learn. So from that, the v'isnachaltem means treat them like a nachla, like an inheritance of property. So therefore, in other words, in the same way as property, the same way as karka can be acquired with chazaka, so can an eved knani. But when it says oisam, the isnachaltim oisam levnechem acharechem, means oisam b'chazaka, only them, avodim knanim, can be acquired with chazaka, v'loi acher b'chazaka, but not anybody else. Nobody else can be acquired with chazaka. So therefore, that excludes the Omar Hevriya from being acquired with chazaka. So therefore, that leaves us only Kesef and Shtar. And Kesef, we already have the Pasuk for Hefka to tell us that that works. So therefore, it must be that if we have a Ribuy in the Pasuk, a hint in the Pasuk to tell us she has to be similar to Avodim Knanim, then it must be referring to Shtar. Okay. The Gemara says, "Ve'ema oisam b'shtar v'lo acha b'shtar." Maybe the other way around. If we have the word oisam by avodim knanim, so what are we saying? We have three ways of acquiring avodim knanim: kesef, shtar, and chazak. So we're saying when it comes to an amah hevriya, we want to argue that only two of those work. Now kesef, fine, is out of the picture because we know that works because of the hefta. We have between shtar and chazaka. Only one of those is going to apply to an amah hevriya. So you're telling me shtar applies because by say to kates avodim, because you have a ribui there that she's like avodim in that sense. And on the other hand, chazaka doesn't work because of the word oisam. Maybe the other way around. Maybe the miut of oisam means you can't acquire her with shtar the way that you acquire an eved knani. But the loisei to kates avodim means you can acquire her with chazaka the way that you acquire an eved knani. So the ema oisam b'shtar v'la'acha b'shtar. So maybe say that the oisam is a miut, and it means that only avodim knanim can be acquired with a shtar, but not an omah hevriya. And the answer is no, because loisei tekates avodim. Again, you have a posik that says that implies that she does get acquired like an eved knanim. Well, the Gemara says amora isa. Well, then what makes you see it logically in this way to say that we should apply that the ribui should apply to shtar and the miut should apply to chazaka rather than the other way around? So the Gemara answers, mistabra shtar havalei l'rabuye. It's more logical to include shtar and say that an omah hevriya can be acquired with a shtar shekein moitzi b'bas yisrael, because after all we find that a shtar is powerful as far as taking her out from her husband, that a get is a shtar after all. So we see that it has a power that chazaka doesn't. In fact, Tosfos points out that it works for kedushin as well. But the fact is, the pasuk says more explicitly that it works as a get, because that's what a get is. B'chosav v'aseh v'krisus. The fact that it works for kedushin, we learn only from a hekesh. On top of that. So therefore, the Gemara prefers to mention the point that it's moitzi, where it says clearly in the positive, rather than machnis, where we have to use a limud for that. So the Gemara says, adraba, chazaka havalei l'rabuye shekein konim nichzei ager. You could argue the other way around. Maybe on the contrary, chazaka is a more powerful thing because it allows you to acquire the property of a ger, when you have, and we've learned this before, if a ger tzedek passes away without children, then he doesn't have any, heirs, because his birth family are goyim, they're not considered related to him in halacha anymore. His wife doesn't yarshin him, according to halacha, and his children, he doesn't have any. So then therefore his property is available for any yid for the taking. And what's a way that another yid can acquire that property is chazaka. He can't acquire a shtar. If a person were to write out a shtar saying, I am acquiring all these nichse ager, nothing happens, only if he does chazaka on the actual property. So then therefore we see chazaka has a strength that shtar doesn't. And the answer is fine, but the ishus mi alai ashbachan, fine, but we're relative to ishus, relative to acquiring a wife, we never find that chazaka has a power over a shtar. We only find a shtar having a power over chazaka. Now with that said, the Tosfos Rid argues, what's that doing in the Gemara over here? The fact is, we're not talking about issues. We're talking about acquiring. We're talking about acquiring an omah hevriya. So what kind of answer is that? But the Ritva says that what it means is that we're talking about the fact is what the Gemara is out to show is that even in an area of halacha such as Ishus, where chazaka doesn't work, shtar does work, as opposed to, now it's true, the specific case of Michse Ager, you have chazaka works where shtar doesn't, but in general, as far as acquiring property, shtar will work. and chazaka will work. So therefore, you don't really have any area of halacha where a chazaka will work and shtar will not, only in the one specific case where you have an entire area of halacha, namely ishus, where it's the other way around. Then there's also an explanation, actually, that the fact is that when you acquire an amah hevriya, there's a certain aspect of ishus in it as well, because afterwards you can do yield with that, where you can do yield, so therefore we can learn it from ishus. So that's one way of saying, therefore, how we know that the ribui loseta katesa avodim is going to include shtar versus the miut of this nachaltim osim is going to exclude chazaka. Iboyseima, or the Gemara continues, another way you could say, lahochiahani imaches. The fact is, it's not just that you have the loseta katesa avodim. Earlier we said we also have a limud from imacheres yikachloi, that you have an equation between the omah hevriya and a regular wife. And so we said, just like a regular wife you can acquire with a shtar, so too an omah hevriya. Now we're talking within Rav Chista's opinion over here, where Rav Chista had said the two shtaris are not identical because a shtar kedushin is written by the husband, whereas here a shtar of omah hevriya, Rav Chista holds, is written by the father. Nevertheless, though, even Rav Chista is going to agree that the pasuk imacheres yikachloi is still making a certain equation between the omah hevriya and a regular wife. So not, he would say, to the extent of who writes the shtar, but at least to the extent of that a shtar should work altogether. So therefore, in other words, according to him, you have three different things. You have imacheres yikachloi, which teaches us something, which teaches us that there's a general concept of a shtar. You have loseta katesa avodim, which teaches us specifically that a shtar is a valid method of acquiring her. And you have the snachaltim oisim, which tells us, but not chazaka. So if you only had the last two, then yes, conceivably you could say the other way around, say that chazaka works, shtar doesn't, but once you have also imacheres yikachloi, so that strengthens the position of shtar and says that if you're going to have a choice between the two of them, then you're going to say among the two possibilities, shtar and chazaka, that it's going to be a shtar. Okay, so that takes care of Rav Chista. Now, what about Rav Huna? Now, according to Rav Huna, he learns exclusively from imacheres yikachloi, and he holds there's an absolute equation between the two shtaris, because in both cases, the one who acquires is the one who writes the shtar. The husband acquires the wife and writes the shtar, kiddushin, and says hareat mekudeshesli, and the odin is acquiring the omah hevriya and writes the shtar and says bitchoknuyali or whatever. So according to him, hi loseta katesa avodim my dorishve. So what does he do with the pasuk loseta katesa avodim? So the answer is haumi boilei sheina yotze b'roshei varim ke'evin. That means what we said before, that she doesn't go free. With Rosh Yevorim the way an Eved Knani would. An Eved Knani again goes free if you knock out his eye or tooth or what have you, and Amar Hevriya does not. So in other words, Rav Chista was saying that you do learn that from the pasuk, but in addition, you also have it's implying that only as far as leaving his service is she not like a vodim knanim, but coming in is different. Rav Huna is not learning it that way. He's saying the pasuk is just telling us that din, just legufay, not to be medayik from it, that she can be acquired like an eved. In other words, Rashi says when you have a pasuk that's needed just to teach us the halacha itself, then you can't also be medayik from it something else. So since over here we need it, because otherwise we would have thought that if an Eved Knani goes free Barosh Evorin, maybe so does an Omah Hevriya. And therefore we need the Pasuk to tell us that not. So therefore the Pasuk is telling us strictly that it's not meant for us to be medayik anything else from it. V'Rav Chista, so what would Rav Chista answer to that? He says, Imken lichtav kro loseta ka'avodim. Fine, but in that case the Pasuk could have said she doesn't go out like avodim. Instead, the pasuk says she doesn't go out like the going out of avodim. So he says, shmamina tauti, therefore you can learn both things from it. Both the fact, legufay, that she doesn't go free with Rosh Avodim, as well as the diuk that, as well as the diuk that, 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 uh, as well as the diuk that her going out is not like avodim, but her coming in to become an amoriyah is similar to avodim in that can be done with a shtar. Whereas Rav Huna apparently is saying that that's not really a significant difference. It's saying loyseita kateis avodim. It could have said loyseita kavodim. It's not a significant enough difference to darshin anything else from it. Okay. So that's that. So that's how we know that, you can acquire an Omer Ivriya with a shtar. And once we know an Omer Ivriya, then we know an Eved Ivri from it by various Hakeshim and Zeta Strugs. Okay. Now we said in the Mishnah, the Koinas Atma Bishonim, in turn, an Eved Ivri reacquires himself, meaning goes free from his master. One way is Bishonim, when years have passed, the 6 years, and that is Dichtiv Sheish Shonim Yavod Rashvias. The pasuk says he works for 6 years. In the 7th year, he goes free. So that's one way that he goes free is automatically after 6 years. Then the Mishnah had continued B'Yovel. Another way is if Yovel comes, and that would be Dichtiv Shnase Yovel Yavod Imach, because the pasuk says he works with you until Yovel. We learned in the earlier sugya yesterday that there's different psukim that talk about when an Eved Ivri goes free in Yovel, and we talk about why exactly we need all of them, why we need to be told by Machruh Beis Din and by Mocher Atzmai and by Nirtza, and we need to be told also the case when Yovel came out only a couple of years after he was sold. In all those cases, the bottom line is that it does work, and therefore Yovel is one of the ways in which an Eved Ivri or Amor Ivriya goes free. Then we said in the Mishnah, another one is Giren Kesef. Another one is the Giren Kesef by deducting from the value. Where, as we learned the last couple of days, he was sold for X amount. So now we deduct the number of years that have been worked so far, and then he pays for the rest. So say, for example, we said he was sold for 6 mana. And he was so far worked for 2 years. So there's another 4 years to go. So therefore, now he has to pay only 4 mana. So how do we know that? So, So Chizkia says, and we learned this the other day, because the pasuk says by an Omer Hevriya, he should make her be redeemed. And that means the lamed shemagareya mepidyon v'yotzer. That teaches us that shemagareya pidyon v'yotzer, that he deducts from her redemption value and lets her go free. He says that, in other words, that we deduct. Let's figure out how many years has she worked for me so far, and we'll deduct that. And you won't have to pay me back that. And therefore, so that in that way, he's assisting with her redemption. We learned yesterday or the day before that it means even if her value has gone up since then, because she's older, she's developed more skills and talents, etc., still we go according to the original purchase price. So all of that is behefta. He makes her be redeemed. In other words, he's assisting in that by foregoing that amount of money. Okay. So those are all ways in which an Eved Ivri or Omer Ivriya can acquire themselves, can go free. So Tana, now we learn in a Braisa, when we say that he can acquire himself with Kesef, the Koinas Atzma, the Kesef of a Shava Kesef. In addition, he can also reacquire himself and go free by paying money or Shava Kesef, over Shtar, as well as with a Shtar. So let's figure it out. The Shlema Kesef, Dichtiv, I understand how we know that he can free himself by paying kesef, by paying actual money, because the pasuk says mikesef miknasa. In the case of an eved ivri sold to a goy, it says that it mentions kesef miknasa, the money that was paid for him. And now it says he goes and pays back that money, and then he goes free. So we understand, therefore, that money itself works. Shava kesef. We understand that also Shava Kesef, any other valuables that are the equivalent of money also work, because it doesn't mean valuables, actually. The Gemara elsewhere explains that even Subin, even Bran, for example, as long as you have enough of it to equal the value, is still called Shava Kesef. The Gemara in Bava Kama explains that all kinds of metaltalin are called Metav, they're called the best. In the sense that you may not find anybody to buy it over here, but you can always take it someplace else and sell it over there, as opposed to Karka, where you can't do that because you can't transport it. So there you have a difference between Meitav and not. Anyway, the point is that when it comes to Shavu Kesef, also Yoshev Gul also, Amar Achmana, the pasuk goes on to say he will return his geula, he will return the what he's using for his redemption. So also now the word Yoshev is extra. So therefore, l'rabas Shavu Kesef Kesef. So it comes to teach us that you can use Shavu Kesef instead. You don't have to pay in money. You can also pay with other objects that equal that value. Ela hai shtar hechidomi, but you're saying that an Eved Ivri can go free with a shtar, which was not mentioned in the Mishnah. So we have to figure out what kind of shtar, hechidomi. What's the scenario? Ilema de kosev a shtar adomi. Do we mean that he's saying, I don't have the money right now, but I'll write you out a shtar and I'll owe you the money? So you don't need it. You don't need a separate pasuk for that. Which, by the way, Rishonim point out, the Rashba and other Rishonim point out, you would have to have, to that extent, you would have to have the Odin agree to it. It's one thing if you're giving him Kesef or Shavu Kesef, then you could do it even against the Odin's will, because you can tell him, look, at least you're getting something of value in return. But when it's just a shtar, it's just a piece of paper, he has to be willing to agree to accept that. Anyway. So if you're talking about that you wrote him a shtar chayv, you say, look, I should have had to pay you $1,000 for my freedom. So instead, I'll write you out a shtar and I'll owe you $1,000. Well, hainu kesef. So why do we need a separate limud for that? Isn't that effectively the same thing? Isn't that effectively the same thing as kesef? Now, you know, to be sure, shtar is not always the equivalent. A shtar is not really always the equivalent of kesef. But the fact is, the Rashba points out. I mean, we know, for example, if a person wants to be mekadesh with money and he writes out a shtar, that certainly doesn't work. But he explains that the Gemara is going to go through over here and talk about the idea that there's a special kinyan on the Eved Ivri, a kinyan on guf, more than what a husband has on his wife. So therefore, to that extent, therefore, the Gemara is going to end up saying that a shtar doesn't work. But right now, we don't know that yet. So right now, the Gemara assumes that the shtar is the equivalent of kesef in the sense that you're just saying that I'll owe you this money. So ela shichru. Evidently, we have to be talking about a shtar shichru, where the master writes out to the slave and he says, I don't need you anymore. You're free to go. Well, the question in that case, shtar lomali. If he wants to let him go free, why would he have to write a shtar b'chlal? Lemale ba'apet trei zil. All he has to do is tell him in front of two edim, go away. Strictly speaking, he may not even need edim, but in case later on he wants to deny it, then the edim will back up the eved. E nami ba'apet be'dina. Or he could tell zil. Or he could tell him in the presence of beis din. In other words, if it's just a choiv, if it's just a regular monetary debt, then all he has to do is be moichel it. So why would he need to, in addition, write out a shtar? Tosfos actually points out that, in that case, then, why would he even need to tell him in front of two people, go, I don't need you anymore? The Gemara could have just as well asked. He could be maskir him. After all, we learned in Gittin that you can be maskir an Eved Knani. We had a machloikas over there whether you need a get shichur, but the only reason we said, according to the opinion, that you need a get shichur, which was Shmuel's opinion over there, actually Rav's opinion, Shmuel had said you don't need a get shichur, Rav had said you do, but that was only because otherwise he's still going to be also to marry a Bas Yisrael. To you, that's not an issue. So Tosfos says you're right. Actually, he could tell him to go hefker as well. He could tell him hefker, but the point is that what the Gemara is asking is if he's gonna free him with a shtar, whatever he's gonna write in the shtar, hareyata ben choron or whatever, he could tell him verbally. So why do we need to? So why do we even need a shtar at all? And the answer is. Omar Rava Zoy Se Meres Eved Ivri Gufay Konri. From this you learn that an Eved Ivri's body is actually acquired by his master. Now, not in the sense of an Eved Knani, because after all, he's not necessarily equal to an Eved, he's obviously not equal to an Eved Knani in this connection. And in fact, there are Rishonim discuss the question what it means that, what we mean by Kinyan Gufay. Do we mean that, you know, for example, where, you know, you have, let's say, for example, you can own a tree, you can sell somebody a tree, not that you own the tree itself, but that you own the payers of the tree. So here, maybe, are we talking about the same kind of thing, that you own the Eved Ivri to the extent where you're entitled to all his Maisi Adayim? So that's one way of understanding the Shita Lo Noda Lami and Meiri understand it that way. On the other hand, the Ramban and a few other Mephoshim explain that the same way as by an Eved Knani, we learned in Gittin, there's two kinds of kinyan you have on him, a kinyan mamon, namely that he's a monetary asset, and also a kinyan iser, that he's also to marry a Bas Yisrael, the same way. By the Eved Ivri, they learn that there's a kinyan iser on him as well, not an iser, but on the contrary, a heter that you have by him, that you don't have by anybody else, namely that he can be with a Shifcha Knanis, as we learned yesterday. Anyway, the point is, Rava is saying, you shouldn't think that the ownership of an Eved Ivri is strictly a monetary thing, and therefore you could just be moichel it, like you moichel any other debt. No, there has to be a shtar in order to take away that gufoy konui. V'harav shemachel al gur'ona, in gur'ona machel, if the master wants to forgive that gur'on, that deduction of money, he can't do it unless he writes out a shtar. So if he's going to free him with a shtar, so even though he's writing in the shtar the exact same words that he would have said verbally, harayata ben chorin, or what have you, nevertheless he has to write it out in a shtar in order to remove that kinyan aguf. And according to some rishonim, that kinyan aguf is a kinyan isur that shtar makes it official. He can no longer be with a shifcha knas. So those are other methods by which an Eved Ivri or Omer Hevriya can be freed. The Mishnah didn't mention those. Fine. One point that Mephoshim make is that maybe the Mishnah is listing only ones that can be done with or without the consent of the Odin. He goes free after 6 years, whether the Odin likes it or not. He goes free in Yovel, whether the Odin likes it or not. And so forth, as opposed to a Shtar where we said that the Odin has to consent. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Yisera all of Omer Hevriya. We said an Omer Hevriya has an additional method over an Eved Ivri by which she goes free, namely when she develops Simonim, when she develops Shtei Sires. So an Eved Ivri is going to be an older person who's sold. You have either he sells himself or he's sold by Beis Din, but either way, he's already after Bar Mitzvah and he's already developed Shtei Sires. And Omer Hevriya is sold by her father when she's little. And therefore, once she develops Shtei Sires, then she goes free, even if it's within 6 years, and even if it's before Yovel. So the Gemara says, "Amar Shlokish Amar Hevriya Koneis Atzma B'Misa Sa'av." Here is another way in which an Amar Hevriya would reacquire herself and go free is if her father dies during the time that she's working for this other guy. And the Shlokish says, "Mikav Koneis Koneis Atzma B'Misa Sa'av Mirushus Adrin." From the ownership of the Odin, and Rish Lakish says, Mikavachomer. You can make a Kavachomer from the Simonim. You figure like this. Uma Simonim she'en metziyan merishus av. Madach Simonim don't take away a daughter from the reshus of her father, because even once she develops Simonim, which makes her a Naira, she's still under the reshus of her father until she becomes a Begeris. Which is another 6 months. So Simonim don't take her out of the reshus of her father, Motzian Mirshus Odin, yet they take her out of the reshus of the master. So then Misa Shemetzian Mirshus Ab, death, when her father dies, which takes her out of his reshus, and nobody else has that kind of reshus over her anymore, which Rashi brings, in other words, for example, let's say her Maisiya Deha would no longer belong to the Yoshim. Rashi refers to a Gemara that we learned in Ksuvus that says that if she's being supported by her brothers, nevertheless she keeps her own Maisiya Deha. And we learn that from a Pasuk. So we see that the death of the father takes her out of his Rishus. Ein Adin Shematziya Mirshus Adin. Shouldn't it be a Kabachomer then that it takes her out of the Rishus of the Odin? So Rish Lakish would say that's another way in which an Amar Hevriya goes free. But the Gemara says, Mesvi Rav Hoshiya, or Mosi Rav Hoshiya, really it's supposed to be. Rav Hoshiya points out a contradiction. Our Mishnah had said, the Seder all of Amar Hevriya, then an Amar Hevriya has an additional thing over an Eved Ivri, that she reacquires herself with Simonim. Now, the Im Issa, if you're going to tell me what you, Rish Lakish, are saying, that to also Misses Av works, Nisni Nami Misses Av, then the Mishnah should mention that as well. So the Gemara says that's not a problem. Tana Rishayo, you could say the Tana listed certain things, but he left out other ones. The Tana, when he gives a list of things, it's not always an exhaustive list. Tosfos, by the way, points out that you could say on the opposite chuppah, you would say once she goes into the chuppah, it's she's out of the reshus of her father, but it doesn't take her out of the reshus of the other. And Tosfos says fine, but the difference is chuppah requires the das of the av, so therefore you could say that it won't work for the other, because otherwise who's ever going to buy an amah hevriyah? The moment he buys her, the father could bring her into the chuppah, and that would be that. So therefore, it's logical chuppah doesn't work. But misa sa'av doesn't involve his das, so therefore we could say it does work. Nobody's going to avoid buying an amah hevriyah because the father might die, because that's not a common enough situation. Anyway. So it's a answer in Tana Rishayo. You could say when the Mishnah gives a list, it's not always exhaustive. Sometimes the Mishnah gives a list and leaves out some units in the list, some individual items in the list. The Gemara says the Mai Shire, the High Shire. You always have to ask though, what else did he leave out? That you can say he left this out. If he left out two or more things, then you can say fine, he just didn't bother to list all of them. But if he leaves out only one, then you can't say that. So the Gemara says, okay, Shire misses Odin. Fine, you can say that he left out the case where the Odin dies, where also the Amah Hevriyah goes free. As the Gemara is going to explain later on, we'll learn on Yud Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara says, no. E mishum misses Odin, lav shiurahu. No, if you're going to say that the Mishnah is leaving out misses Odin, where it could have mentioned and it didn't, that's not something that's in the same category as the other things of the Mishnah. Because after all, that applies to a man as well. Namely, now what we mean is, we're going to learn later on that with an Eved Ivri, the death of the Odin doesn't always free him, in the sense we learned this briefly before, that if the Odin has a son, then the Eved Ivri continues working for him, as opposed to an Amah Hevriyah not. Still, though, the point is, the Rashba explains what we're saying over here is that Misa Sa'odin, freeing the person, applies to some Avodim Ivriim in the sense. It depends whether the Odin had sons or not. If the Odin had only daughters or only other Yoshim, then the Eved Ivri does go free. So therefore, the concept of going free by Misa Sa'odin does apply to a husband, does apply to an Eved Ivri as well, and therefore you can't say, in other words, the argument is that there are three ways for an Amah Hevriyah to go free. One that said in the more than evidently, Simonim, and now Rish Lakish is arguing also Misses Ha'ab, and then Misses Ha'odin. What we're saying, Misses Ha'odin is not something that an Amah Hevriyah has over an Eved Ivri, because there are cases where Misses Ha'odin frees the Eved Ivri as well. Some yes, some not, depending on whether the Odin died without sons, and also, as we're going to learn later on, depending whether the Eved Ivri was nirtza, depending whether his ear was pierced, where once his ear was pierced, then Taki doesn't continue working for his son either. But at least in some cases of an Eved Ivri, he goes free with Misses Odin as well, so therefore the Mishnah couldn't have listed that as an advantage of the Amah Hevriyah over the Eved Ivri. So the Ikanami Be'ish, it applies also to a man, or at least to some cases with a man, therefore Loi Katoni, so therefore it didn't mention it. So you still, according to Rish Lakish though, you have only two ways in which an Amah Hevriyah can go free where an Eved Ivri can't. Simonim and Misses Ha'odin, and therefore, or Misses Ha'ab, Simonim and Misses Ha'ab, and therefore the Mishnah should have listed both of them. If it's listing only one, then that implies, maybe, that the other one doesn't apply. So the Gemara says, well, then you're right. So then the question would be, according to the Shlokish for Elam Nisni, so then according to the Shlokish, it should mention Mrs. Av. And the answer is no. There was a different reason why it didn't mention it. Tana Dover should yesh the Kitzva Katani. Because the Tana maybe only wants to list things that have a Kitzva, that have a fixed time when they're going to happen. Kesef Miknase, to pay money to reacquire them, you know, it's not a fixed time, but at least you know when there's a certain amount of money. You can plan in an advance kind of. Sheishonim and Yovel, you know when those are going to come. As opposed to Dovash and Lakitzva, Lakatoni, arguably the Mishnah is not listing things where you never know when they could happen. So the father dying, you never know when that could happen, so therefore maybe that's a reason for the Mishnah not to mention it. So the Gemara says, well, simonim de inlam kitzva b'katani. What about simonim? There's no particular time when simonim could come either. They could develop any time, and yet it does mention it. And the answer is, omer p'safra, inlam kitzva l'mayla, or yeshlam kitzva l'mata. It's true, there's no latest time that they could come, but there is an earliest time that they could come. There's a time before which, if Shtei Cyrus develop, they have no effect. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa. Then Teisha Shonim Shehedi Shtei Cyrus, a boy who is 9 years old or older, who develops Shtei Cyrus, Shuma, we don't consider that that's simonim that now he's considered an adult. We say it's considered just like a wart that developed hair and it has no effect in halacha. If he develops them between age 9 and 12, and then they're still on him when he reaches 12, shuma, then also they're still considered a shuma. On the other hand, there, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer Simon. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says in that case, they can be considered a simon, even though they developed before age 12, but they're there already after age 12. So therefore they're considered a simon. Then Yud Gimel Shana V'yem Echad, and if they develop the Shtei Cyrus after he's 13 or older, Divra Hakol Simon, then everybody agrees that it's Simon. And you have similarly as far as girls, slightly different ages. In fact, Rashi refers to the Gemara in Nida there, points out on the face of it, what are you doing between 12 and 13? First the Braisa had mentioned up to age 12, and then it skips to 13. What happened between 12 and 13? And the Gemara discusses over there, it means that the Gemara gives there several answers over there, whether we're talking about a boy or a girl, or we're talking about both, etc. The point is, in other words, that there's a certain age below. Now, the halacha, by the way, is like the chachamim. So any hairs that develop before 13 for a boy or before 12 for a girl are not considered simone gadlus, even if those same hairs still exist after that. But derech klal, for most purposes in halacha, we usually say we have what's called chazaka de Rava, that Rava says there's a chazaka, that a boy or a girl of that of the appropriate age has developed Shtei Cyrus at the appropriate time, and therefore were considered a god, therefore they're considered a gadol, and we don't actually have to check. There are certain rare cases, for example, chalitza, where you do have to physically check. But even then, if we find hair there after 13, then generally we go with the assumption that that developed only after 13 or 12 for a girl, and not that it developed earlier and is still there now. Anyway, the point is, Reb Safra is saying, so when you buy an Omer HaEvriya, you know at least there's a certain amount of time before which you don't have to worry about Shtei Cyrus. Say, for example, the father sells his daughter, but as an Omer HaEvriya, when she's five, or let's say, for example, when she's eight. So let's say she's eight. So you know it's 4 years until she's 12. So therefore, you know during those 4 years, Shtei Cyrus are not going to be an issue. So therefore, in that sense, it's similar to Shei Shonim or Yovel or whatever, where you know there's a certain defined time when it's going to happen. So fine, you don't know. She may reach 12 and not develop Shei Cyrus yet, but you know at least it's not going to happen before 12. So there, on the other hand, Misa Sa'av could happen any time. So therefore, you could argue that would be a reason for the Mishnah to not mention it, even if, like Rish Lakish is saying, it does work. Okay. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes says, fine, I have another contradiction against Rish Lakish. A Braisa says, Rav Shimon Omer, Arba'a Ma'anikim Lahem. There are four cases where an Eved Ivri or Omer HaEvriya goes free and you give them Ha'anaka, you give them the presents that we're going to learn in the next couple of blah, that you give them when they go free that it talks about in Parshas Re'eh. Which Rashi points out, we're going to have a machlokas further on. There are opinions that say that if the Eved Ivri runs away, then he doesn't get a Hanukka. And there's also an opinion that says, and then there's a machlokas about what happens if he goes out with Gira and Kesef. What happens if he pays for his freedom? Does he get Hanukka? We're going to have a machlokas about this later on. So Rav Shimon wants to give us a simon to exclude both of them. So altogether, he says there are only four ways, even though there are six ways altogether in which an Eved or Omer could go free. Nevertheless, two of them don't get Hanukka, namely Rav Shimon is saying if they run away or if they buy their freedom with money. So the four of them are Shloisha Be'isha, Shloisha Be'isha. Among those four, three of them can apply to a man, and three of them can apply to, and three can apply to a woman. In other words, there's one that applies only to a man and not a woman, and vice versa. And the iyat yocholoma above echad mehem, it's impossible to have four, to have all four of them by either one, by a man or a woman. Lafisha in simonim beish, because when it comes to a man, simonim don't make a difference. The pashtus is already sold after he has simonim, but even if not, then simonim don't make him go free. The inritzia beisha, and on the other hand, a woman you never piusuil. The four ways that we're talking about are. The four ways at this point we're assuming are 6 years, yovel, nirtza, where nirtza goes free when the adin dies, and simonim. So therefore, three of them, 6 years, yovel and mrs. adin, apply to the eved, and 6 years yovel and nirtza will apply to a man. To a woman, there'll be 6 years yovel on simonim, because by her there's no nirtza. So v'im isa. Now, if what Rish Lakish is saying is valid, and there's another way for an omoria, nisni nami misis av, then it should also list the death of the father. V'chitema hochinami tana v'shayer, you're going to answer like you tried to before, that maybe the tana is not listing all the possibilities. Can't be. V'ha abar katani, he says four. And then he says there can only be four. There can never be four different ones by one person, because you only have three that apply to a man, and among the four, a different group of three that apply to the woman. Now Tosfos explains the question is not so much the fact that Reb Shimon is saying number four. Even when a Tana says a number, you can still say there are more things that he left out. The point is rather that Reb Shimon is stressing that there's no way to ever have four ways of getting Hanukkah for an Eved Ivri, or four ways to get Hanukkah for an Omer Hevriya, based on what Rish Lakish is saying, there would be four ways for an Omer Hevriya. 6 years, Yovel, 6 years, Yovel, Simonim, or Misasa'ah. So therefore, but if it does, so if he doesn't say that, then that would imply that Misasa'ah doesn't work. And chitema tana davar sheyesh lekitzva katani v'davar shein lekitzva lekatani. You're going to answer like we tried to answer before, that the tana is only listing things that have a certain defined schedule to them. What about the law v'has simonim de'ez de'emayim kitzva? What about simonim? We said there's no fixed time v'katani, and yet it lists them. V'chitema hochanami k'de Rav Safra. You're going to answer like Rav Safra, that at least you have a minimum amount of time that has to pass before they come, because you can calculate from when the Omer Hevriya is sold until her bas mitzvah, and you know at least you have that amount of time. What about Mrs. Odin getting my kitzvah? What about the Odin dying? There's no particular scheduled time for that either, because Tanya, and yet Reb Shimon lists that. So therefore, we see Reb Shimon in his braisa is listing even things that have no scheduled time. So therefore, according to Rish Lakish, he should also be mentioning Mrs. Avi, even though it has no scheduled time. So doesn't that seem to be then not like Rish Lakish? So Ve'ela Arba Mayinu. So then in that case, we have to figure out what are the four ways that Reb Shimon is talking about. Shonim v'yovel v'yovel shoritzia v'amay ibriya v'simanim. So the four that Reb Shimon is talking about must be the regular 6 years, yovel for anybody, yovel specifically for an eved whose ear was pierced, and an amay ibriya going out with simanim. So the answer actually is, so the Gemara is actually answering that no, Reb Shimon is not in fact including Mrs. Odin. You're thinking to begin with that Rish Lakish is that Reb Shimon and the Braisa, that his list of four includes Mrs. Odin. You're assuming to start with that you're talking about 6 years yovel, and you're talking about 6 years yovel, the death of the Odin, which is when a nirtza goes free, and simonim of Omer Hevriya. Now we're saying no. Instead of Mrs. Odin, you're including yovel for a nirtza. So the Shimon is not listing Mrs. Odin at all. So in that case, then fine, that still works with Rish Lakish's opinion. He's not mentioning Mrs. Odin because not scheduled. Therefore, he's not mentioning Mrs. Av because not scheduled either. But maybe in fact, Reb Shimon would agree that Mrs. Av she goes free. Okay, the Gemara says fine, but I have a different problem with Rish Lakish. The Elu Ma'anikim Lahem, the following Avodim get Hanukkah, get these severance gifts when they go free. Hayotze B'shanim, when he goes free after 6 years, over Yovel, when he goes free in Yovel, over Mises Oden, or when he goes free because the Odin dies, and you have, in other words, even though he's dead, his Yoshim are still required to do it. In fact, the Tzoris learns, not even, we talked about the other day, the question of whether Shibud or Daraisa, the concept of Shibud, does it apply to Daraisa or not? Even if we say that not, here it's a special Choyv that the Torah puts on the Yoshim as well. Anyway, the Omer Hevriya with Simonim, and the Omer Hevriya goes free with Simonim. Now, the Im Issa Nisni Nami Mises Av, if you're saying like Rish Lakish, then you should also include Mises Av. Here it mentions Mises Odin, so you can't say that he's only listing scheduled things. But he came a ton of a shire. You're going to say maybe the Tana is leaving out some things. Again, you can't, because Vaha Elu Katoni, the Braise is saying these, implying there's no other ways. But he came a Dovash Yesh the Kitzba Katoni, Dovash and the Kitzba Le Katoni. You're going to say he's only listing scheduled things, while Simonim the Inland Kitzba Katoni, yet Simonim have no schedule. And yet he mentions them. Again, you're going to try to explain like Rav Safra that says at least you have a minimum number of years before they come. But you can miss a Sa'odin. But you have the Misa Sa'odin where it does mention that even though it's not scheduled and you never know when it could happen. So now in this Braisa, and this Braisa is actually the first half of the Braisa that we brought before with Rav Shimon. So therefore, from this half of the Braisa, it's very clear that Misa Sa'odin works, but Misa Sa'av does not. Tiyufta did Rish Lakish. So therefore, we have a contradiction on Rish Lakish. And the Gemara says, you're right, Tiyufta, it is a contradiction to Rish Lakish, and therefore Misa Sa'av doesn't work. An interesting point, by the way, that Mefor should make is, if this is the first half of the Braisa that we had from before, then why didn't the Gemara ask from that first? Why did Rav Sheshes ask only from the end of the Braisa? And now we have Rav Amram bringing only the beginning of the Braisa, which is where we slog up Rish Lakish. And there's a couple of answers, including that maybe, in fact, in the yeshiva, maybe Rav Amram brought up the first part of the Braisa first, and then slogged up Rish Lakish from that. Later on, Rav Sheshes pointed out that on the face of it, the second half of it contradicts me also. And then when Rav Ashi and Ravina came to arrange the Gemara as we have it, then they put Rav Sheshes as first, because the Gemara will often do that. The Gemara would rather give the final refutation at the end and then go through the other possibilities before that. So when they edited the Gemara, they may have put these out of order. Anyway. So the Gemara asks, Rish Lakish Kavachoymer Omar, didn't Rish Lakish prove his point from a Kavachoymer? So you're going to tell me, fine, we're slugging them up based on a Braisa, but why Taka doesn't the Tana of that Braisa learn that same Kavachoymer as well and say that Mrs. Sa'av should work for her to go free? And the answer is, the Gemara says Kavachoymer Prichim, because the Kavachoymer is a weak Kavachoymer, you can slug it up. Mishum De'ikal Mifrach, you can slug it up and you can say, Malas Simonin Shneshtana Haguf. You know why Simonim are powerful enough to get her out of the Rishus of the Odin is because the body changed. She was a Katana, now she became a Naira. It's like a different body. So you can argue, therefore, the father could say, I sold you my daughter as a Katana. Now she's a Naira, it's a different status, and therefore she has to go free. Now, Tosfos points out that's not going to be enough to get her out of the resource of her father, because the fact is her father regardless what age she is. Fine, eventually she becomes a Begeris, she's going to go free. But the point is, in other words, at least as far as fatherhood, you can say his fatherhood doesn't expire just because she became a Naira, but mastership is different. It's like a different goof. He bought one goof, and now it became a different goof. So, term of Mrs. Av Shekem and Ishtana Aguf, how are you comparing that to Mrs. Av, where her body didn't change? She's still the same Katana that she was. So, therefore, that slugs up Rish Lakish's Kavachoymer. And now, even if it had just been for slugging up his Kavachoymer, we still wouldn't have necessarily said the halacha is not like him. But now that we slugged him up from a Braisa, then that's it. The halacha is not like him, and Mrs. Av doesn't flee. Okay. The Gemara continues. Toni Choda Enek Eved Ivri La'atznoi. Now, you have one Braisa that says Now, the Hanukkah, the gift that you give to the Eved Ivri or the Omer Hevriya, when they go free, one Braisa says that the Enek of the Eved Ivri goes to himself, the Enek Omer Hevriya La'atzma, and similarly that for an Omer Hevriya goes to herself, the Tanya Idach, Enek Omer Hevriya Metziyos Alavia. Another Braisa says that not only her Hanukkah, but also anything she finds belongs to her father, the Emer Rabba El Eschava Tola Bovan. If during the time that she was working as an Omer Hevriya, she finds something, then her father still gets to keep it, the same as he would. If she wasn't an Omer Hevriya, all her master has is Schar Batala. In other words, for example, that she took off time, but when she found this Metzia, so necessarily she took some time off her regular work to find this Metzia. So therefore, so the Adam can be compensated for that, but he doesn't get the actual Metzia itself. You can have a case, let's say, for example, where her time is very valuable, but he's still only getting schar batola. He's only saying he's only just getting minimum wage for the amount of time that she found that mitzvah. Now, if we have these two brises, my lab hod nafka b'simonim v'hod nafka l'mitzvah sahav. Now, let's say maybe we haven't completely schlugged up the shlokish. Maybe after all, this brisa supports. Maybe after all, one of these brises supports him. Maybe the one brisa is talking about where she's eventually going free with simonim. So therefore, so she's still a katana, and therefore when she's so now when she's going free with simonim. So she's still a naira, she's still under her father's rishus, and therefore the father gets the hanukkah. V'ha the naftal of Mrs. Av, whereas the first brisa that says she keeps it for herself would be when the father dies. So in that case, then at least we find a brisa that says she goes free when her father dies. And the answer is like, not necessarily. Ivy v'ivy the naftal of Simon. In both cases, in the brisa can be talking about where she goes free because of Simonim. V'loi kasha, ha de isil av, ha de lesil av. One brisa is talking about where the father is still alive. The other is talking about after he passed away. So the first brisa that says that she keeps it for herself is where the father passed away, and that it doesn't go to her brothers. The second brisa that says that her father gets it is when her father is alive. So the Gemara says, "Bishlema enek omar hevriya la'atzma." Now, why does the brisa need to say this anyway? I understand what the chiddush is, that the Omer Hevriya's Hanukkah she keeps for herself. The point is, l'mo'uti achin, it comes to exclude, you shouldn't think her brothers get it. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, we talked about this on Omer Aleph, when it says, v'isnachaltem oisam livnechem achareichem, the pasuk says you should bequeath them, meaning avodim knanim, to your children after you, and the word oisam means livnechem, oisam livnechem means only them, avodim knanim, do you bequeath to your children? V'loi b'nei seichem b'nei. You don't bequeath your daughters to your sons. So from that we learn what we said on Amar Aleph, for example, that when the father dies, the maisi adeha don't go to her brothers. Because if they did, then that would amount to that the father is almost like bequeathing his rights and his daughters to his sons. And you don't do that. So therefore, obviously, therefore the Braisa, which is telling us that she keeps her Hanukkah, is telling us that too doesn't go to her brothers. She keeps it herself. Ela enek eved ivri la'atzmei, but you're saying the Hanukkah of an eved ivri goes to himself. Pshita, isn't that obvious? Ela l'man, who else is it going to go to if not to him? So Omer Rav Yosef yud kras kochazina hocha. Rav Yosef says, I see over here a yud kras. Rashi explains yud is a small letter; it's the smallest letter of the alphabet. Kras means a big city. So like the yud has been made into a big city, which is a way of figure of speech, meaning here the Tanner just put in extra words without needing to. There are other Rishonim who explain, rather, that Yud Kross is the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael, and particularly, there's an explanation about Shem Chacham, that's the name of a Talmud Chacham, and in particular, the Mefoshim point out, there's a Gemara in Tainis that mentions someone named Rav Yosi, the Min Yud Kross, who was known to be a very harsh person, and therefore, Rav Yosi is saying, the same way as that kind of person is difficult to get along with, the Gemara tells over there, the same way, this question is a very difficult one to resolve, why the Tanna would bother mentioning this when it's not necessary. There's a fascinating explanation from Rav Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, where he says, I'll pick Kabbalah, he says that Rav Yosef over here is reaching back to the original Yosef, the Shevet. We have, he was an Eved for a while, and then what happened? We know that Hashem gave him a letter of his name, the letter Hey, and with that he was able to learn all the 70 languages. So Rabbi Yosef is saying, is hinting at the idea, the Yud has like blown up into a Hey, the Yud has become a big thing, the Hey, which then was given to Yosef as his Hanukkah, as his severance gift from his slavery, and with that he became the great, and with that he became the great Prime Minister Yosef. So Reb Yosef over here is hinting at his namesake, at what happened with him, at the spiritual Hanukkah that he got. Anyway, I saw also an interesting word from the Yid HaKodesh of Prishista that he says it's also hinting at the fact that normally you have to give tzedakah even from small amounts of money, but here we're saying the Hanukkah, because he's poor, he's getting this Hanukkah as an Eved Ivri, he's not required to give tzedakah from it, and he explains how the word Yud Keres hint at that point, from the Yud becomes a city again. You don't actually have to give tzedakah from it. Anyway. So that's Rav Yosef. Abaya Omahochi Om Rav Sheshes Homani Tutoi. Rav Sheshes said, you should know that this Braisa is, according to Tutoi, which is the name of a Chocham, the Tanya Tutoi Omer, Loi Veloi Labal Choyve, as we learned a couple of days ago, that he learned that when it says you give the Hanukkah Loi, it means not to his Baal Choyv, meaning we said, even though normally you have Shibuda de Rav Nosson, you have the case where Reuven owes Shimon money and Shimon owes Levi money, we take the money from Reuven and give it directly to Yehuda. Here we don't do that. Even if the Eved Ivri owes somebody else money, we do not take away the Hanukkah from him and give it to his Baal Choyv. Rather, he gets to keep it himself. We talked about the other day that we had the Chachamim and Rav Elazar argued on that point. Rav Elazar held like Tutori over here that you don't give it to the Baal Choyv. The Chachamim held not like that. And we had a discussion over there from Tosfos. What does that mean? In the end, is the halacha like Rav Nosson or not? And we said one possibility, which Tosfos and some other Rishonim bring up, is maybe the halacha is like Rav Nosson by most kinds of chovis, but not when it comes to Hanukkah. There we would say this exception and say that we don't give it to his Baal Choyv. And the point is, that's why Abaya says, that's why the Braisa needs to mention Enek Eved Ivri La'atzmai, that because Tutoi is telling us that you should know, it means you don't give it to his Baal Choyv, even if he owes somebody else money. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, talking about more about these dinim of Hanukkah, Be'ez Hashem.